You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Today on our show, we're going to shift gears a little bit. We'll talk Razorback basketball in the summer, give you a summertime update on Razorback hoops. Plus, we'll have Colby Hale, the Razorback soccer coach, on the show as Arkansas gets ready to play a top 10 matchup against Duke this week over at Razorback Field. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome in, Matt Jones, along with Anthony Christensen. Anthony's our basketball guy. He's also our soccer guy, so I wanted to have him in studio today. Thought it'd be perfect for him to talk about these two sports. Razorback football, if you want to read about it, go to our website, wholehogsports.com. We've got plenty of coverage there. We'll talk Razorback football again tomorrow and Friday on the podcast. But we took the podcast on hiatus for a couple of months this summer, and I want to catch up on what's happened with Razorback basketball. There was an open practice in July that you were able to attend. I know you've been able to talk to John Calipari a couple of times. You've talked to some players. We kind of have been able to piece together a lot of the schedule. As you have had these conversations and based on what we've seen and what we've heard, kind of what's your feeling heading into Razorback basketball? Because people might say, well, why are you talking about Razorback basketball? I don't know if people realize we're like less than a month away from the start of preseason practice. I mean, it's one of those deals like when kickoff for football season comes around, here comes basketball and it sneaks up on you in a hurry.
Oh, yeah. No, it's that overlap season, it's fun. But no, I think it's an exciting time, right? I mean, there's a lot of exciting pieces on this team. Having spoken to players and coaches, they're really excited about the defensive side of things. They're really thinking that they're going to have a physical team, especially on the defensive end. But yeah, there's a lot to be excited about. Obviously, the returning core: Carter Knox, Trevin Brazil, DJ Wagner, Billy Richmond. I mean, those guys come back with, experience. I think that's 60% of their scoring from last season coming back, which is, which is huge. If I'm not mistaken, it's the highest number in the SEC. So, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about if you're an Arkansas fan, I think. And yeah, just having spoken to players and coaches and fans and, former players, coaches, whoever, people seem to be really excited about it. John Calipari, year number two at Arkansas, and I think people are excited to see, how the team performs with some, prolonged stability. Obviously, he came in during April of his, leading into the Final Four, when he was first hired. So it was, a hectic time. And how does the team do with some more stability and, not having to deal with, getting as many players in through the portal? Obviously, a lot of those guys followed him from Kentucky, but it's still, you have to bring them in and get through all of that stuff and everything. And you don't have to hire a bunch of coaching staff members and stuff like that. So it should be an exciting time, I think. Yeah.
There was a lot of talk out of practice about Trevin Brazil and that he looks different. It's not just the new hairdo. He looks physically different. He looks like, he just trusts everything. He had the knee issue there for a while. He just looks like he's back to being the Brazil. And we saw this at the end of the year in the tournament, even down the stretch in a couple of games at the end of the regular season, where it's like, okay, that looks like the Trevin Brazil that we were expecting to see a long time ago. And maybe it's taken him a little bit longer to find the best version of himself, but that we may be on the verge of seeing that for a full season this year.
Yeah, I mean, he looks physically great. He's definitely added some muscle onto his frame and everything along those lines. And I mean, you think back to how he finished the season last year. Obviously, the SEC tournament game against Ole Miss aside, I mean, he was really good. I mean, you think about that Vanderbilt game on the road. He was outstanding. And it's his last year of college basketball, so he's going to be playing for a professional contract, and would be that in the NBA or G League or overseas, wherever it may be. He's going to be playing for a professional contract, so there's, I don't know if it's added incentive to play well, but it's that's part of it. But yeah, he looked good during the practice. He looked good physically. He looks ready. And yeah, I think especially given how he finished last season, I think it's a, you know, there's reason to be optimistic about what Trevin Brazile's going to do. And then Carter Knox also looks really good physically as well. He's slimmed down a little bit. You know, he looks, you know, he's another one who looks, you know, ready to take on the season. You know, obviously he went through the NBA draft process, came back to school, and you know scouts, you know, want to see him, you know, continue that form from, you know, the back end of the season, especially the second half of the season and into the NCAA tournament, you know, when he was at his best. And, you know, if he's able to play up to that standard and, you know, defend up to that standard as well, because I think people may forget just how good of a defender he was during the NCAA tournament, you know, he can boost his draft stock and maybe get into that first round discussion.
You know, one of the issues, if you will, for Arkansas last year, I'd say it was an issue. I mean, when you look back at some of their losses, you say they didn't have the physicality that they needed.
Yes, the physicality and rebounding and everything. Yeah.
And that it seems like there has been a real focus put on that in assembling this year's team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Nick Pringle is, you know, he's on the last stop of his SEC tour, as I've heard it kind of explained. Obviously, he played at Alabama, he played at South Carolina, and now he's at Arkansas. Also had a stop at JUCO and at Wofford, if I'm not mistaken. So he's been around the block. He's experienced. You know, he's played in a Final Four, and I mean, he's a physical front court presence, and I think that's, you know, he's going to be a big piece for them. And Malik Ewan as well. I mean, I think if you look at Malik Ewan's numbers, you can maybe get the wrong idea of the kind of player he is. You know, he's physical, he's a rebounder, yes, but he's really good with the ball in his hands. He's a good ball handler, he's a good passer, and he's athletic. He can have, you know, guard-like moves. I'm not saying he's going to be your point guard or anything, don't get me wrong, but, you know, he's got a lot of skills that you want in kind of your modern big man. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to light it up from the three-point line or anything, but, you know, he can rebound, he's physical, and he's a good passer. He can initiate the offense. He's a good, you know, if he gets the ball on the top of the key, he's not going to look lost. You know, he's going to be able to find different passes, find guys in the corner, find, you know, guys off the pick and roll and stuff like that. So I think he's one who, you know, I think the staff is really excited about, just in hearing, how John Calipari has talked about him and in various different, you know, summer things that he's spoken at. You know, I think he's one they're really excited about. And then you have, you know, Paolo Semedo and Elmer Zafic, who have both only just gotten to campus. I'm not thinking that they're going to be immediate contributors, I don't think. You know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I mean, I think, you know, not having the summer to get, you know, acclimated to their new surroundings is, you know, they're a little bit behind the eight ball is probably the way I would think it is right now, just because they didn't have that time. But I mean, you can see, especially Paolo Semedo, he's big, he's strong. I've heard that he's got, you know, he's a good inside presence who, you know, he's physical and everything along those lines. I'm not sure that, you know, he's a shooter by any means, but yeah, I mean, those two guys are, you know, they add to the physicality, I guess I should say.
So what do you think the identity is for this team?
I think that it's going to be a lot about building on last season's defensive, I guess, principles. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but I mean, last season, I think the team's identity was its defense, which was kind of a little bit counter to what Kentucky was in John Calipari's last season there, because a lot of it was, you know, Kentucky can score like no one else, but it was a lot of, you know, but can they, you know, guard? Whereas this past season, you know, Arkansas would go through a lot of, you know, scoring lapses and, you know, kind of, you know, have some leads dwindle away because they couldn't, I guess, put the game out of reach, which we saw in a lot of their wins, and then obviously against Texas Tech as well. But, you know, the defense was always solid. I mean, they finished with a top 20 defensive efficiency in the country last season. Offense, I think, was down in the 60s, if I'm not mistaken. So I think just in my conversations with players, coaches, I think the defense is really where they're, at least over the summer, is where they're focused. And I think that's going to be a main, I guess, identity of this team, is just being physical on defense and, you know, being willing to, you know, draw and take contact, and also, you know, be tough on ball defenders. I mean, you look at a guy like Billy Richmond, who, you know, is always going to be, ready to guard against anybody, whoever that may be.
He's ready to guard when he gets off the bus.
Yes, exactly. So I think that's the big thing I'm looking at, and I'm looking at, does Carter Knox take another step as a defender? Is he going to be, that all SEC caliber defensive player that I think he can be? I think he thinks he can be. I think the coaches think he can be, teammates as well. So I think that's kind of, at least at this stage, where they're really locking in.
I like Richmond, by the way. I mean, I just, there's something about a hustle player, and that's what and I don't want to put him just in that box of, hey, he's just a hustle player. Because I think he can do a lot more than that. But but the hustle plays, those are the ones that just, they stand out to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it felt like with him, whenever he got the opportunity, because he didn't always get the minutes, but whenever he did get the minutes, it felt like he was going to make one, but probably multiple plays that nobody on the court was going to give you the effort to make.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when you look at a guy like him, I think where you really want to see his, next steps or progression is on the offensive end. Can he add more range to his shooting? I think everybody saw that he can drive. Can he add more of a mid-range in a three-point game, which I think maybe you started to see a little bit at the end of the season. Not a ton by any means, but he ended up, I think, finishing 2 of 16 or so from the three-point line for the season. So I think that's kind of where you want to see him grow the most, is kind of adding more to his offensive game. So then he's got the frame, he's got the defensive ability for sure to be a pro. I think you want to see him, add more range to his shooting, as the next steps, if you will, because he was very good at driving and getting to the rim and everything along those lines. And I think he's a good ball handler. I know they used him at the point guard spot a few times, and I think that's where I think you want to see him grow the most.
If we have mentioned DJ Wagner, it's only been in passing, and that's certainly not it's we're not overlooking him. Mm-hmm. I think it probably just tells you that you like a lot of the pieces that are around him. I thought the season turned last year when we thought it was going to maybe turn for the worse when Boogie Flan got injured and we thought he might be out for the rest of the year. That's actually – it was almost kind of like a blessing in disguise for that team last year, because you take Wagner from being an off guard where he didn't look like he was totally comfortable to letting him run the show, and then everything just seemed like it started flowing a lot better with him in that point guard role. Is that the expectation again for him to be their number one point guard this year?
That's the question that I think is maybe the biggest question about this team, is who is that primary point guard going to be? Yeah, is it going to be DJ Wagner? Is it going to be Darius Acuff? I mean, I think you're going to unquestionably, I think that's your backcourt, at least at the start. I think those are your two starting backcourt players. But who is going to be that primary ball handler? Do they, switch on and off at who's doing it? Does Wagner kind of take on that primary ball handler role, or is it going to be Acuff? I think that's the biggest question mark, at least on the offensive end of the ball at this stage of time. So it's interesting. But DJ Wagner, I think, it's exciting, because when he was coming out of high school, it was kind of expected that he was going to be, this one and done prospect. But he dealt with some injuries in his freshman year, and probably wasn't ready to try to take that step. And then after his sophomore year, I think he had some up and down moments. And I think defensively is where I thought I saw him grow the most, from his freshman to sophomore year. Excuse me. Not that I was watching every Kentucky game, when he was a freshman. I watched a lot because I'm weird, but I think that's where I saw him grow the most, was defensively. So can he add a more consistent jumper? Can he be more of a, can he step into more shots? Is he a catch and shoot guy? I think in different conversations, it seems like he's, I don't want to say less hesitant, because I don't know that he was ever really a hesitant shooter, but he's maybe more confident, maybe has less of a hitch in his shot and things along those lines. So I think he's somebody who I expect to have a big year. And I think that's the big question, is, do you see him more as, an off ball guard like he was at the start of last season, or do you have him as the primary point guard and let Darius Acuff kind of be that off ball guard and stuff like that? So I think that's the biggest question mark around this team's offense at this moment.
Of course, Malik Thomas, a five-star guard who's incoming for the Razorbacks too. Just a lot of talent,
a knockdown shooter
on this lineup. I'll tell you, the Hunter Yurecek's coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. It's going to be September 4th. That's next Thursday at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can still get tickets at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com, to hear Hunter Yurecek at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We know quite a bit of Arkansas's basketball schedule for the upcoming season. SEC has put out the schedule for the most part for the upcoming year. There's still some midweek dates where we don't know if it's going to be a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. But I'm always, I think one of the things I always look for when I look at the schedule as a whole, and especially conference games, are the Saturday games at home. Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm not going to the road games. You're going to be there, but I'm not. But so I'm looking at, like, what are those big Saturday games at home this year? And here's who Arkansas plays at Bud Walton on Saturdays in conference play. They start with Tennessee on January 3rd. That's a big one, to say the least. LSU comes in on January 24th. Then there's the Kentucky game on January 31st.
That'll be fun. Yeah.
First time Kentucky's come here with Calipari as Arkansas's coach. Obviously, that was a great game last year over at Rupp. One more.
You know what happened that night?
At Rupp?
Afterward.
I don't know.
That was when Luca got traded.
Oh. Well, I
remember I looked over at other people on the beat, and I was like, guys, we covered the biggest story in sports in American sports for about 3 hours, but we just got usurped. We got passed up.
Well, I didn't know that was that night. I was too busy. I was so surprised by that Arkansas win. We went to eat at Tim's Pizza here in Fayetteville.
Never been.
Oh, you need to go. And so we're there, and we saw, and it's one of those places where, like, when you go in there, it is inevitable you are going to see people you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the Cheers of Fayetteville. It's where everybody knows your name. And so you go, and we're talking about the game. It's like 2 hours before tip off, and I'm talking to this guy who I know who, he's like, well, what do you think it's gonna be? I was like, I don't think it's gonna be very good, you know, because they lost, like,
it was five of six or something like that. Yeah,
it wasn't good at that point.
And then the manner in which they won was
the level, like, and that's the thing.
Not just that they won, but it was
an offensive clinic.
Yes, which was phenomenal. The exact opposite of what you would have expected going into that game if Arkansas was going to win.
I don't know that I have enjoyed watching an Arkansas regular season basketball game on TV like that. Now, there have been some here at home, but I'm just talking about just sitting back and watching a game on television like I did that Kentucky game, and I don't know how long. It was so enjoyable to watch. For one, because it was high-level basketball. Mm-hmm. It was probably the most efficient that they played offensively. Outside of maybe Mississippi State, they were really good on offense. But, like, there weren't three other games last year where they played as well offensively as they did at Rupp.
Maybe Maryland Eastern Shore.
Stop. Stop right now. So anyway, Kentucky comes to Fayetteville on January 31st. That could be one of those where, like, college game day comes.
That would be fun. I've never covered a college game day day.
So they were here.
I know. They were here the last Arkansas home game before I started.
Was that right?
Yes. I was so upset.
Huh. I didn't realize it had been that long. So, or that, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So they were here for Kentucky a couple of years ago. And I thought they would go to Rupp, but then they ended up going to Duke, North Carolina on the same day. So maybe they're here. Who knows? And then a couple of other Saturday games. You got Auburn on Valentine's Day. That's also, can I just say, that's the night of Arkansas's baseball game at Globe Life Park in Arlington.
Busy day.
And it's inevitable. Well, here's what I'm going to say. It's inevitable that the Saturday that Arkansas plays at Globe Life Field, there is a really good basketball game at Bud Walton Arena.
All right.
That the Razorbacks typically win. Don't shoot me. I'm just the messenger.
I like covering good basketball.
And then Mizzou comes in on the 21st. Kind of interesting. Arkansas's last two Saturdays, they go on the road. They go to Florida and they go to Missouri. We also know a lot about the non-conference schedule, and there are a lot of big non-conference opponents that have been – yeah, there's Queens, but there's a lot of big non-conference opponents that the Razorbacks are playing. Here are the ones we know about. We know that they're going to go to Michigan State. They're going to play Duke in Chicago. They're going to play Louisville at home as part of the SEC-ACC Challenge. They're going to play Texas Tech in Dallas on a Saturday in December, and they're going to play Houston in, I'm going to say, the New York area on December 20th. And I say that because the original report from the Houston Chronicle was that this game was going to be played
in Barclays Center.
At the Nets Arena, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And now, from what we're hearing, it's actually going to be played
in Newark at the Trenton or wherever.
The old Nets Arena in Newark.
Yeah, so
Nets has been announced.
Yeah,
but from what we've heard, it sounds like this could be played in Newark instead.
Yeah, and then there's in at Barclays Center, there's a women's basketball doubleheader that same day. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot going on in that area, and I think Duke and Texas Tech are playing at Madison Square Garden that same day as well. So there's a lot of high level basketball in the New York. I mean, there's always high level basketball in the New York area, but that day in particular, a lot of fun.
They just announced, by the way, while we were recording this, that the Michigan State game, that has a date on it now, November 8th.
Oh, there we go.
Is going to be in East Lansing. And then there's going to be a return game the following season where Michigan State comes to Fayetteville. Yeah, this is the kind of schedule that you want as a basketball fan.
Yeah, especially – and then you look at the bye games. Like Southern is – you know, I mean, it's a SWAC team, but it, you know, regular season SWAC champion last year, lost in the tournament – and Queens was solid and is in its first year as a full-fledged Division I member, so they can finally get into the NCAA tournament, which I nobody needs to ask me in my opinion on the transition rules. I think it's stupid, but you know, they, regardless of what I think, you know, it's Queens' first year as a team that's fully Division I and can play in the postseason, so that's exciting. And but, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fun games on this
James
schedule.
Madison's a team that's had James some Madison success in the past.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Byington, who's now the coach at Vanderbilt, was the coach at James Madison 2 years ago when they won, I think it was 31-32 games, and should have made the NCAA tournament as an at-large bid had they not won the conference tournament, but they left that out of the hands of the committee and won the conference tournament and then beat Wisconsin in the first round of the tournament. So, but now they've got Preston Spradlin in there, a really good coach who was at Morehead State while I was covering the OVC in Evansville. So, yeah, James Madison's, I mean, that's fun. And you look at, you know, these other games that they're playing against. You mentioned Michigan State. If you can get to Breslin Center, I mean, I not to have a sales pitch, but I covered a game there when I was covering Evansville in Southern Indiana. Southern Indiana played a road bye game there to start the season, and not to start the season, but opening weekend or so. And awesome, awesome environment. And I'm sure it'll be a better environment when it's a top 20, top 15 matchup. And you know, the season's opening weekend and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, and then, I mean, the schedule overall, SEC included, I mean, they play each of the eight teams who are in last season's Elite Eight. So, that's fun.
I'm looking this up. While I'm looking this up, because I want to see if Michigan State has a football game in East Lansing on the same day.
I don't think they do. Okay. I want to say they don't. And I think it was I sent this list.
They're
a
off.
Long time ago.
They're off.
Yep, I see. I know Michigan State, I think, was on that list that I sent when I was going, like, the Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like, guy going crazy on the board. Like, I wrote down a list of every power conference school that had a football bye week that week, and I figured it was going to be a neutral site game, but they were going to play one of those teams. But I mean, it's a home-and-home, and I'm not going to complain about going to East Lansing. It's a great place. Good pizza place right on campus. I don't remember the name of it. I'll find my way back there, I'm sure. but, I mean, Breslin Center is an awesome, awesome arena. I mean, the student section, it's, you know, it's like all the way around, all around the court, which is awesome. Yeah, the Izone, and yeah, it's a cool place. So, I mean, obviously, it's not close, but if you can get there, I highly recommend it. And yeah, Duke on Thanksgiving. Mom's upset that I'm gonna miss Thanksgiving again, but you know what? It's Duke. Sorry.
it's the classic Calipari schedule. You're going to have at least a game that people are going to be excited about at home, outside of your conference games. You're going to have at least a trip or two to another team's arena in non-conference, and then you're going to have a few neutral site games that are spread about.
Texas Tech game, I'm very excited about that. That Texas Tech team is going to be top 5, top 10 in preseason.
So. I like this. I like how they put this schedule together. It gives some flavor to the non-conference schedule that in past years hasn't always been there.
Oh, yeah. So. No, it's fun.
And
that's
Baylor.
What it should be.
No Baylor this year. They're supposed to play this year, but sounds like that may happen a future year where Baylor comes back to Fayetteville. All right. When we come back, Colby Hale, the Razorback soccer coach, is going to join us as, speaking of Duke, we got a big Arkansas-Duke soccer match coming up this week over at Razorback Field. We'll talk to him in just a moment, but first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. I want to tell you, too, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. And we're joined now by Arkansas soccer coach Colby Hale. The Razorbacks going to play a big matchup on Thursday night over at Razorback Field. Number three, Duke. Duke was number one in the polls last week, fell to number three despite not losing a game last week. Arkansas number eight this week in the polls. Colby, how do you explain a team falling from number one to number three still being undefeated?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone knows. You know, with polls this early in the season, they don't really mean much. I will tell you this, based on video, pretty much everyone in the country would say Duke's the best team. Mm. You know, I think Notre Dame will get there. Notre Dame was kind of like us, maybe figuring some things out early, but Duke feels like they're rolling. They just beat Penn State 3-2, who's a top team. And I think right now Duke's the most complete team in the country this early in the season.
You know, you've really stacked your schedule here at the start of the season. You played Iowa, you played Notre Dame, played Georgia Southern over the weekend. Now you got Duke. I mean, these are three teams that are really highly ranked teams. You go to BYU next. That's a team, obviously, that's had a lot of success. What was kind of the thought process putting this together and challenge your team the way you're doing out of the gate?
Yeah, John actually said, I think we play like seven of the top 13 and like a crazy amount of ranked teams. We just believe you grow outside your comfort zone. And like, while it's fun to score five goals and beat somebody, does it make you better? I'm not sure. So we knew we had a young team. We knew we had a very new team. You know, we graduated quite a bit. And we knew if we were going to be peaking at the end of the season, we needed to get some questions asked of us and see if we could find some answers early.
Lost to Iowa to start the season, had the draw with Notre Dame last weekend, beat Georgia Southern. So you're 1-1-1. What have you learned about your team so far?
That's probably fair. Like we've been too up and down to be 3-0. We need to be a little more consistent. You know, the first half of Iowa, we were horrible. The second half, we outshot them 13-2. I thought Notre Dame, for long stretches, we were as good, if not better. And then Georgia Southern, we just weren't very good and just found a way to win 2-0. So we'll need to start putting some things together with the schedule if we want to start beating some of the best teams.
Yeah, and you mentioned the consistency there. It's something you mentioned after the Georgia Southern game as well. You're playing a lot of players trying to find that consistency. I guess what are the biggest struggles that you've kind of found or biggest difficulties that you've kind of found in trying to find that consistency?
Well, and I think every season it takes a while to figure yourself out, right? Like I was even looking back to last year, that last team was pretty old. And we played Michigan State early, and we had players in all sorts of different positions in how we ended the season. So, you know, you don't get any questions asked of you if you don't play teams that are as good as you. And so for us, it just takes a while, right? Like we've had some pretty key injuries. Some of our like key players have been out at different stretches of the season. And it's taken us a second, right? This was probably our best week of prep. Now, is that because we play Duke and the team's a little more focused than they were Georgia Southern? Like, that's not to our standard. That's not how we do things. I do understand human nature and how that creeps in, but that's not our goal. Our goal isn't to play up to the teams that, you know, maybe ranked and play down to the teams who aren't. Our goal is to have a standard for everything we do.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, playing players in different positions and trying different players in different spots. Just what kind of goes into, I guess, your thought process in saying, hey, maybe this player is more of a defender naturally, but I can try playing her in midfield. Like, how do you kind of make those determinations?
Well, that's how our program's always worked, right? I mean, we played Jaylen Brownlee up front against Notre Dame in the second half, and she was wildly successful. So, you know, we're just going to do what the game needs us to do to try to win the game. You know, some people are just like, hey, we're just going to do A, B, and C every single, and it doesn't matter. Like, we have some non-negotiables, but at the end of the day, you know, we're not afraid to move players around to try to get the result on the day.
I want to ask you about your health of your team, Colby. I know you've had some players who have been out or been limited. Where are you at right now?
We're getting there. You know, we're getting there. You know, like, I think one of our best qualities as a program is we don't, like, we're probably delusional in a healthy way. You know, some people are like, you know, next man up, but then they obsess over the players they don't have. There's nothing we can do about that. Like, we're going to try to get them back as quick as we can. Players we don't have, we don't have. So if we spend 1 second thinking about that, it's a wasted second. And so for us, it's just kind of all hands on deck. And, you know, we've had some players step up. I mean, Molly Teed's not even a defender, stepped in and played fantastic against Notre Dame in a role she's never played before. So, you know, we're just looking for ways to win games, really, you know, opportunities for other people. And we have plenty of good players.
When you played Notre Dame, I was really struck by the play of Kennedy Ball that night, one of your forwards. And even like the game tying goal, the penalty kick by Zoe Sussey, she gets the goal, but I felt like it was Ball's hustle who set up that opportunity for her. Just what have you seen from her and maybe her growth that she's made from last year?
Yeah, that video got like 3.5 million views when she double megs the kid. I mean, Kenny was fantastic. Kenny needs to be that good all the time. I told her, hey, congratulations. You've just set yourself a new standard, so I have the right to be pissed at anything less than that. you know, Kennedy's a very talented young lady. She has high character, a great work rate. She needs to step up into a bigger role and get comfortable with that. You know, even her dad texted me. He was like, man, I've never seen her play like that. I was like, good. That's the new minimum standard for her. She's a very, very talented kid, very talented. And so that was by no means a surprise. It was not an anomaly. I think she's capable of that pretty regularly.
Yeah. And we've talked about, you know, this being a fresh team after having a pretty old team last year. And you have players like Kennedy, like Zoe and others, Jalen, Mack, kind of stepping into more of a leadership role. How have you kind of seen them kind of, I guess, adjust to those larger roles, you know, in this early stage of the season?
They're doing really well. I mean, it hasn't been, the transition has been interesting, right? It's a new day every day with them, but they're want to, they're, you know, give a crap factor, their care, their character, like all those are incredibly high. So while they're figuring out their way and their voice a little bit, like the foundations that you would need of character, care, work rate, like those things have always been there. And, you know, you're trying to play some younger players and some new players. And I mean, it's some moving pieces. And this schedule that we've put together is definitely helping. Like if we played seven teams we were better than, we would be seven games in and not really know anything. So we figured some things out. We're still figuring some things out. And again, Duke is going to pose a lot of new problems for us.
When you played Notre Dame the other day on SEC Network, they were showing some father or some pictures of your father, Colby, and the planes that he flew in the Air Force. If you would tell people about what he did and maybe how your experience growing up in a military family, how did it shape your coaching, if at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I could talk for 7 hours on that. The first thing you notice is he's tall, so my mom ruined my basketball career. I was probably a better basketball player, but at 5'9", you know, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity out there. So my dad was actually, he's a fighter pilot in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. He was the first person to ever fly the stealth fighter. So we used to live in Las Vegas. This was when it was all top secret. And he would leave on Monday, come home on Friday. We didn't know at the time where he was going. We know now he was going somewhere in Tonopah. To go test fly the stealth fighters. I went to 3 kindergarten schools. I went to 3 third grade schools. I think I lived in 10 states, England twice. I didn't even play soccer till my sophomore year of high school. Played football, basketball, baseball. I moved to England my sophomore year and they didn't really have, they had those things, but it wasn't to the same level. And so I ended up playing on an Air Force base in soccer. It was a great experience. Came back my senior year and then had to figure out what I wanted to play. Baseball was my best sport. And I stuck with soccer, and obviously that's turned out to be, you know, a good decision. You learn to adapt. I mean, every 3 months or every 3 years, I was the new person in school, and I had a plethora of experiences. I lived everywhere in the United States. I lived in Europe. I've traveled to all over the world. And it just provides a little broader perspective on things and my ability to adapt and evolve and change, you know. When we got here, it's the mountain bike capital of the world. And we have 20 bikes, like we mountain bike. You know, when I lived in Idaho, we snow skied, like whatever you did, wherever it was, we just kind of did those things. And I've really enjoyed the variety of experiences.
So at what point did it become declassified to you? And you found out what your dad did and what was your reaction to it?
So he actually missed Desert Storm. He was, you know, we were glad, but he was kind of frustrated because Desert Storm was right after, you know, every 3 years in the Air Force, you change planes. Mm-hmm. And so after his 3 years there, when it was, we did not find out till afterwards. I think it was maybe 6 months after we moved from Las Vegas that we found out what he did. And it was pretty fascinating. I mean, it was a weird time, obviously. Your dad's gone Monday to Friday. You don't even know what he's doing, where he's going. But honestly, like what a cool experience for him. And, you know, I actually thought it was kind of cool being an Air Force brat living all over the country.
I would assume some of the kids that you go to school with, they're going through the same things with their parents being in the military too.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually have one right now whose dad is a fighter pilot in the Navy. Mm-hmm. And she has a similar experience. She doesn't always know where he's at. He's on a deployment right now for 6 or 7 months. And I don't think she even knows where he's at. Everything's a little different, you know, like my wife grew up in basically the same home and lived in the same neighborhood as all of her family members. And that's got some cool experiences too, right? A little bit mm-hmm. more baby roots. But I wouldn't trade the experience that I had, for anything.
Hey, since we're talking about family, I want to ask you real quick about your son. Is it Callan who played the national anthem at BOM back in the spring? That was a pretty cool experience.
It was It was as nervous as I've ever been. So he plays a lot of gigs, but he's in bands. So like if you mess up, you can't really tell. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're doing the national anthem, it's in front of that many people, but it's just you and everyone knows the song. So if you mess up, everyone knows. The cool thing about that story was it had nothing to do with me. So he plays for School of Rock and the guy who plays the organ is one of the main guys at School of Rock. And he told the baseball guys, hey, I have the first kid that I feel comfortable telling you will play the national anthem. It was funny. They sent us an email, me and Brittany, and said, you know, hey, we'll be at a baseball game. If you guys need tickets, just let me know. Like he had no clue that I coached at the University of Arkansas. So that's what I always thought was cool. That was kind of something he earned on his own. He's incredibly talented. He works very, very hard at it. And what we're hearing, he's got some pretty special talents there.
You remember the unique anthems, and when you got a kid out there playing on his guitar the way he did, that was one that really stood out to me. A couple more about your team here, real quick, before we get you out of here. You know, I've watched the evolution of your team from where you went from the team that was kind of hunting to now you've kind of become the team that's been hunted, at least in your conference, where you've won so many conference titles. Coaches have picked you to win it again this year. I wonder, how has that changed, if at all, maybe the feeling within the program over the last 5 or 6 years?
You know, that's a good question. We still kind of see ourselves as underdogs, even though we know we're not. Mm. You know, if we play 25 games in a season, we're probably not the favored team in most of them. You know, and not only have we done well in the SEC, like they did a goal differential. I think our goal differential is like 140 goals. Like, sorry, we've scored 140 goals more than anyone else's in the SEC. Hmm. Our goal differential is more than anyone else's scored goals. So we've not just done well in the SEC, we've dominated the SEC. And so everyone hates us, like literally. Like if you said, who's the team you hate? We're probably number one in every single aspect. We're just kind of sorting through that. I mean, we know what we are. We know what this is. We know we're going to get everyone's best effort.
How do you balance this time of year wanting to win to help your resume for the postseason and just focusing on getting better game to game, with playing Duke? Winning would be the result you want to have, but when you look at this game in 2 or 3 days, how are you looking back on it and evaluating it?
Yeah, I mean, did we play well? Did we grow? Did we win? I mean, fortunately, getting better and winning are not mutually exclusive. They go hand in hand, and so it's both, right? Like, how do we get better in the context of winning the game in front of us? We're not going to, we have identity pieces and we have 5 of those and like we work on those. That's what we work on. Now there'll be tweaks based on who we're playing. Cause you know, based on who you're playing, there'll be some times where we probably have territory. We're in there and most of the time and we believe we'll probably be out shooting them and out playing them. Then there's times where maybe it's a little bit more even and transitional. So in those games, you know, maybe the roles and who we play are slightly different, but overall who we are should look similar. You know, Duke plays a little different style than us, although not that different. And so really it's going to be like who can impose their will in the game, and in the games we impose our will, we normally do well. And the games that the other team does are normally the games we struggle.
Arkansas and Duke going to play Thursday night at Razorback Field, 6 o'clock. will be the start time. There's going to be a striped jersey giveaway. This will be televised on SEC Network Plus. Colby, good luck to you and your team moving forward.
Thank you. By the way, that striped jersey I saw today, it is pretty sweet. Like, it is not cheap. It looks exactly like our striped jerseys did.
Are you wearing your striped jerseys during the game?
We don't have them anymore. Okay. That was just the one that the fans wanted for the jersey. But we do an alternate, and Nike discontinued the one we had. So we'll probably have to reintroduce that in a year or two.
All right. Sounds good. Good luck to you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks, Colby. We appreciate you being with us today. Hope to see you tomorrow on our podcast as we get back to talking football in this Arkansas-Alabama A&M season opener that coming up Saturday at Razorback Stadium. Hope to see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.